Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hi, John Schwab from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 90 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are happening, to meet the people that make that theater happen. You can find all our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other fine podcast streaming services. So just, you know, wherever you want to go to there and fill your boots. And if you have a spare 30 seconds, I just please urge you to rate and review our podcast to help us be more discoverable to listeners who haven't heard about us yet. And now for this week's podcast. We, and when I say we, I mean Americans, celebrated Independence Day last week. So I thought that during the hottest stretch of weather I can remember in my 25 years here in the UK, I thought that I would bring you some of my favorite chats over the last few years of the coolest, you see what I did there? Americans that have come over to play on the London stage, with each of the following three making their London theatrical debuts, and all of them known for their star turns on screen. Just something different. We've kind of reached back in the archives, and I think you've heard snippets of these before, but maybe not the whole chat, so hopefully you'll get something different. Now, John Goodman has spent his entire career on screen, going huge on the television in the sitcom Roseanne back in the 80s, and then appearing in pretty much, well, anything the Coen brothers filmed, including the iconic character Walter in The Big Lebowski. That's where I kind of fondly remember him. Now, we caught up with him when he was on stage in American Buffalo at the Wyndham's Theatre here in London in Ivo van Hove's dazzling production, where he starred alongside Damian Lewis and Tom Sturridge. Now, we chatted about his learning Mamet, which is not easy. I've done it before. And the difference between New York and London audiences, amongst other things. Have a listen. Very basic questions.
I'm a very basic
ladies and gentlemen, this is your half-hour call. You have 30 minutes. Thank you.
So you've been on stage in New York, and is this your West End debut?
It is.
How does it differ from being... was there any kind of any difference?
The only difference I noticed with the audiences are a little quieter here. They're more attentive, or I don't know if they're listening more. I don't know, but it's startling for me sometimes. I don't think they're listening, but they, at the end of the show, they come alive. So it's there's a difference. That's the difference.
Yeah, in Germany, it's even worse. They're very quiet in Germany, but very appreciative at the end of the show.
Yeah, I don't speak German, so I'm sure I'll never do a play.
I mean, but you don't really get off stage.
I'm not off stage
at all.
Yeah.
So
I couldn't tell you what the hijinks ensue.
Do you hear anything going on backstage? Yeah.
Outside the theater, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, I just play like it's street noise.
What's your favorite moment on stage? I mean, it's quite a physical show.
What's my favorite moment? Jesus Christ, I don't know. I don't know. I really don't. It changes.
Yeah.
I've created dead spots for myself that I'm trying to repair for the 3 months that we've been here. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
Great audience set. There was lots of laughter, and you guys have found a lot of comedy. I mean, David Mamet is
fun, and dark and fun, and it's really fast and frenetic. And you,
yeah,
you've created a lot of space in a script, in a band script that isn't often there. It's normally the quick fire. That's the way some people present it. I quite enjoyed having those lovely moments of respite.
The pauses?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they're written in.
Yeah.
It's when we started, I paid particular attention to the punctuation, the periods, the commas, dashes, parentheses, or ellipses.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of difference in it. It helps with the rhythm or the staccato or the syncopation of the piece. And then I've forgotten it all. But it was useful in the beginning. And, there are pauses that I steamroll over that I have to remind. I took one today that I forgot about, and I got a nice laugh after it. So I'm going to try to put it back in tonight if I can remember it. I'm so goddamn tired and old now.
Well,
so old and feeble.
Not true.
I'm
not
in my
true.
Fucking dotage. But yeah, it's very specifically written, and there's a lot that is not written that you have to fill in for yourself. And we have as a company have tried to do that together.
Yeah, it was very successful. Matt and I have thoroughly enjoyed it this afternoon. Lots of laughs. And lots of moments of yikes. It's a small company. It's a small, cast of three. And two other studies as well. But what was the build-up like, and how quickly did you guys kind of did the rehearsal process? How quickly did you?
We were pretty quickly, because there was a desperation to learning lines.
Right.
They're extremely hard to learn, and for some, I thought it was only me, but thank God it wasn't. It's just the way it's written. It was hard for me anyway. But
ladies and gentlemen, the house is now open.
We seem to bond over that, and just finding. Putting this world together that wasn't it's not spelled out on the page. To create Grace and Ruthie Fletcher, all the people that are off stage that we talk about, the restaurant that we go to, the world outside and inside, where we've been that day, what we've been doing, what we're going to do after, just filling in the blanks. Hi.
The play's not about that.
It's about 2 hours long.
John Goodman there being rudely interrupted by Damian Lewis just as we finished there. No, I'm just kidding. It was, it was really great to be backstage to witness the banter between Damian and John. It was amazing. Now, next up is an actress who exploded onto our screens as Suzanne Crazy Eyes Warren in Orange is the New Black. Now, before that, she could be seen treading the boards on and off Broadway for years. So to say that she was an overnight success would be doing her a huge disservice. She earned it. And you can tell how much she actually loves doing theater in this next conversation, where we also discuss what it meant to her to be on stage in London when she appeared in The Maids at Trafalgar Studios. Have a listen.
You talked about leaning and being there for each other, and as an actor, it's quite having a limited number of casts, but being in no props.
Yeah.
How liberating that is, but also how invigorating it is leaning on your colleagues.
Yeah.
Was it scary at first, or did you have to adapt to that?
I think at first you think when there's no props, or there are no props, and you're, even the set itself is sort of bare and barren, you think that it's just us. This is the cast. It's just the three of us there. Then what does that expose? And I think what it really exposes is the concerted team effort that is required to make the piece live and sing in the way that makes it most effective in terms of storytelling.
Yeah.
And I think what starts to innately happen is the entire cast and the entire company, because we're more than just the actors. There's an entire army sort of working behind the scenes to make it go. Great. That you, it makes you lean into the team components.
I love that phrase, leaning in.
Lean in.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, you have to lean into it.
Yeah.
You know, press against it, because when you lean on something, you know, the idea is that there's nothing there, but actually you wind up finding this wall of support behind you. That's the truth of the matter, you know.
Yeah.
Something's holding you up, and I think that's what we find every night in this show, that we try our best to hold each other up.
Amazing. One, can I ask you one more thing?
Sure.
First time on London stage?
Yes.
What do you think?
I love it.
It's fun,
isn't
it? I
really
do. It's great.
It was a dream come true, you know, for me. I really, like, a true dream come true.
You know, so I sat outside a theater in the Criterion when I was 18 years old and told my future wife, like, one day I'm going to play on one of these stages. And then 20 years later, I go, played that one?
Yeah.
But so
it's a dream, right?
Yeah.
This is where it sort of all began, you know, in part, and like, or at least what we understand as sort of Western theater, traditional Western theater. It began in this, a piece of it began here, and not only that, there's the respect and appreciation that's sort of put inside of you at such a young age, and to be able to do a play of this type on the West End, you know, which I'm not, it's uncommon, and it's just very satisfying to know that people will come and see and support and put up pieces that are of all different types. So this is a dream, and it's a gift to me. I feel like I am just, like, so grateful to be here.
Well, thank you for coming over. And
oh, my gosh.
Awesome. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Uzo Aduba, from her time at the Trafalgar Studios playing Solange in The Maids, which is directed by Jamie Lloyd, and it starred Zoe Ashton and Laura Carmichael as well. And now, one last chat to bring you. And this guy is a seriously cool cucumber? Customer? Whatever. Michael C. Hall has created and played some of the most iconic characters on stage and screen, from David Fisher in 6 Feet Under to the eponymous Dexter, I mean, who can forget him, as well as a nice stint on Broadway as the titular Hedwig in Hedwig and the Angry Inch. We had so much to discuss about his time in David Bowie's Lazarus. And it is absolutely evident that he adored his time in this musical. So all I can say is have a listen.
I just want to talk to you about what your experience has been like in the show, like creating this piece of art, as a piece of art.
Right.
It's just incredible. I saw it on Friday. Blown away.
Oh,
like,
cool.
Didn't want to leave the theater. You know?
Sweet.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So how... You know, how was creating the role of Newton and kind of going through that process of Evo? I've seen Evo's work before.
Yeah.
Really, really.
I mean,
appreciate what he does.
You know, there was a lot about it that was certainly daunting.
Yeah.
Given that I was, not reprising, but updating or a role that you know was associated with. The guy who composed the music for this, David Bowie, you know that guy? And
I think he's got a great career ahead of him.
But he was so kind, and you know, and Evo was so insistent that I personalize it, so that kind of diffused whatever potentially intimidating element was there. It was amazing. It was an honor. It was daunting. It was an honor. It was certainly a challenge to, you know, find my way through it, but also leave a sense of discovery and mystery. You know, I mean, I think Newton doesn't really know what the hell's going on. Yeah. So if there's a sense of mystery, I don't think it's something that needs to be done away with. Yeah, and I mean, I think there are things that I discover about it, even tonight. So, I mean, it was an incredible experience, and of course, given that he died about a week and a half before we finished in New York, and that we brought it here to London and had a chance to do it again, it's, you know, really a humbling experience, you know, to be the messenger for this particular piece of his final artistic output. You know, it's sort of beyond anything I could have imagined.
On that note as well, just this week must have been incredible on Sunday, you know, with his birthday. And everyone tells me that everyone burst into a spontaneous happy birthday, which is awesome. Also, you know, with tonight being the anniversary of his death, just as a company, you know, or even like feeling that from the audience. I mean, the people were still clapping when you guys were up here, you know.
Yeah.
It's been an experience.
I think... you know, it's not like we really have to sort of do anything differently on nights that coincide with his birthday or his death, because the show is already so powerful. And, you know, I think for some people, you know, people see the show for lots of different reasons, but there definitely is an element of the audience who are there to process the fact of his having died, or grieve, or celebrate, or have some sort of communion with his spirit, and as much as it exists in the theater, and that's true every night. So, you know, his presence has always been potent, and really all the more so since he's died.
Last question. Thank you for your time.
Sure.
You transferred from Theater Workshop to 200 seats,
right?
I believe.
Yeah, 199.
199, good number. To King's Cross Theater. Do you find any difference between the audiences? The playing space?
Yeah, you know, but it hasn't been as jarring as I thought it would be. When I initially saw the space, I thought, this is too vast.
Right.
You know, how are we going to... But in a way, you know, I spent a lot of time staring into the back wall of New York Theater Workshop, imagining it was sort of into the void, and now I actually have a void to stare into. You know, the audience just sort of disappears into nothing. And the playing space is a bit wider, but pretty much the same. And the configuration of the space being a sort of long rectangle, much longer in this case, but... is the same. So, I mean, in a way, this the experience of doing it here feels more like you are just floating in space, which is appropriate, you know. So that's nice.
Brilliant. Well, listen, thank you so much for your time. Michael C. Hall backstage after a performance of Lazarus at the King's Cross Theater in 2016. Jeez, 2016, that was 2 years ago. That's insane. Where has the time gone? Now, before we wrap up, if you are a theater professional, head on over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free profile page. All you have to do is, you know, create an account with an email address, enter a password, away you go. Start entering your credits and start connecting with the rest of the theater industry. You can follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Curtain Call, at Curtain Call. That's all lowercase. Well, it's all together anyway. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any suggestions or feedback for the podcast, just get in touch with me via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me at john@curtaincallonline.com. It just leaves me to say a big thank you to John Goodman, Uzo Aduba, and Michael C. Hall. I mean, how cool is it to say that? I'd like to thank all the respective companies and productions for welcoming us backstage and letting us sit down and have a chat, and also to get all the amazing photography that we've been able to share with you over the last few years. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, and I will catch you all next week.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.